People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, I'm going to be talking to Patrick Solomons. I don't know if you've heard about a comic strip called Molo Songololo, which has been around for a while. Patrick is the executive director of Molo Songololo, which is a registered and designated non-profit organization that promotes the rights and protection of children and facilitates children's participation in public decision-making. Patrick apparently has more than 30 years' experience in the child rights and protection sector, working for and with children and youth. And as managing director, executive director, Patrick has directed Molo Songololo's programs and made significant contributions to the development of the child rights framework in South Africa. So it's an important subject, as you can well imagine, in these days and days. And we've just come out of 16 days of activism, so it's very good, Patrick, that you are here. So welcome, welcome, Patrick.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here with you and chatting.
Good.
About myself, not more.
We'll get to yourself in a moment. But I just want to find out more about Molo Songololo, because a few people, one of my colleagues here, said he used to read them years ago as a child. Has it been around a long time? And it's a comic strip, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little magazine for children, by children, for children. It was started in 1979. The first edition came out in the beginning of 1980. But in 1979 was the International Year of the Child. And all over the world, people were promoting the rights of the children. And in South Africa, Cape Town, there were community workers, religious workers, who promoted the rights of children. And out of that process, Molo Songololo gave birth. So it started out as a child rights organization, promoting the rights of children. And your listeners will know during those years, there was that children's rights in South Africa was not quite respected. We were living under apartheid.
Yep.
And so it was very important to promote children's rights. And also highlight, of course, how the state is violating children's rights. Because if the state is not protecting children's rights, we are going to have a very, very big problem. And we see that increasingly now all over the world, whether it's in Palestine, whether it's in Congo, whether it's Sudan, or wherever it might be. But once states don't support and recognize and protect children, you will see that you have things like massacres happening, targeting of children. So Molo Songololo is a very important tool to amplify the needs of children, the interests of children, the rights of children, also the protection of children. So with other organizations, we did a lot of work to prepare ourselves for the transformation in South Africa and also to create a new child rights framework for children in South Africa.
Is the government now supporting you? Is the government at the moment good about protecting child's rights?
Oh, we've made incredible progress. Of course, you know that we've got this wonderful constitution that we celebrated for all over the world because this constitution actually protects human rights and children's rights. So there's specific clauses, protection clauses for children and for adults in our constitution. And we worked very, very hard to contribute towards that. And then, of course, also after 1996, when our new democratic government was in place under the leadership of President Nelson Mandela, we had to change all the apartheid laws, get rid of them, and to reform the law and to create new laws. And we then also were fortunate enough and able to, you know, organize children to take part in that process. So the new child law was created. At the moment, the body of law is the Children's Act. Now, the Children's Act is the tool that basically guides everybody that works with children on how children should be treated, what children's rights are, and what their responsibilities are towards children, whether it's parents, teachers, people that work with children have duty towards children.
And this children's rights thing came out of our constitution, did it?
That is correct. Once we've had our constitution in place, we then I had to change all the other laws because they were not meeting the standard of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And our Constitution and our human rights law is based on the international law as well. So we had to make sure that we comply to the international standard. And once we've created a national standard, we had to make sure that all the other laws and policies in South Africa meet that standard.
Yeah. It must have been a very exciting time for you and your colleagues after the downfall of apartheid to be able to open up new rules, all sorts of things. It must have been hard work, but it must have been a very exciting time.
It was, yes, it was. And it was also a celebratory time. We were able to celebrate the achievement, the transformation that we've achieved, and also fairly without much violence. There were quite a bit of sort of flare-ups of violence we've seen during the 90s, the early 90s, for example, during the negotiation process that happened. But it was fairly non-violent, our transformation. And yes, there was lots to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Anti-racist laws were put in place. Gender equity and equality laws were put in place. So we've made a lot of gains. And also child protection laws were strengthened in South Africa. So there's lots to celebrate through that process. But,
and yet, isn't it ironic that we are still experiencing gender-based violence, let alone presumably violence towards children as well?
Yeah, that's so. It's very difficult to change behavior, of course.
Yes, of course.
But we have made quite a bit of progress in that regard. We have fantastic legal framework to protect children, to promote children's rights, and that is something that we can be proud of as South Africans. The big challenge that we do have is implementation. That's also where we have quite a bit of problems and challenges, and whether it is in the health sector, education sector, the food sector, for example, too many children are still going to, are hungry. And also the shelter sector, more and more children are not living in proper shelters, for example. And then, of course, also we have the care sector. Far too many children live and grow up without their fathers or parents. So we have a lot of work to do.
I want to find out much more, Patrick, about Molo Songololo and the children. But first of all, as you know, I invited you to get some music. What is your first choice?
Of course, Mary Makeba.
Okay, yes.
I think for many South Africans, she's such an icon.
Absolutely.
And I was very fortunate that in the late 60s and 70s, I got to discover her music. And so, yeah, Mary Makeba is my first choice, actually.
And she's singing The Lion Cries.
That's right, yeah. She's absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you. suka falila madoda wo ndichinda kutenda na kwa suka falila madoda wo
Miriam Makeba, can I say the great Miriam Makeba, Patrick? And she was singing The Lion Cries there. The first choice of my guest, Patrick Solomons, who is the executive director of Molo Songololo, which, as you hear, is a registered and designated non-profit organization to protect children and their rights. Section 28 of the Bill of Rights is the children's rights. So before we go into that sort of detail, tell me more about Molo Songololo, because you said it's a magazine produced by children.
Yes, the organization, because it takes on a child rights sort of approach, children's participation is one of the key bodies of rights for children. So they've got their provisional rights, that is their basic rights that they must be provided for. Then they have their protection rights, right, like anybody else. We have protection rights, and then we also have participatory rights. Now, children also have participatory rights, so as an organization dealing with children's rights, we also want to make sure that we practice this. Mm-hmm. So we involve children in the work that we do. So we consult with them, we check what their interests are, what their needs are, and then we also involve them in our decision-making process and also our activities and programs. So we had the magazine. So we established, for example, a children's editorial group where the children decide the issues for the magazine. They also contribute towards the magazine. We set up little groups where they research stories and articles, and they would collect also from their peers stories and articles. And that's how we involve them in the actual production of the magazine. They then also were involved in the distribution of the magazine. So the magazine had a very wide footprint. We distribute all across the country the magazine. And we also had educators using the magazine as a tool in the classroom. Because remember, during the apartheid years, many educators had problems with the textbooks because they were skewed with particular kind of political nuances
That's
and stuff
right.
like that.
That's right.
And so the magazine was the source of information, contemporary, current information for children. And so that's what teachers use then in the classroom. We also, of course, prepared for teachers a kind of a manual once a year of how they can use the magazine in the classroom as an educational tool. So yeah, the magazine was an interactive magazine. It was alive with children, for children. And so from the magazine, we then also engaged children in rights education, of course. The magazine we taught, but also having dialogue with children to talk about what their rights are. And then also how to make sure you can exercise your rights. Right. How do you defend your rights, for example?
Patrick, how old are these children you're talking about? What sort of age group are we talking about?
The age group is basically from 12 to 17, but there will be some younger ones and some older ones as well.
Okay. And this magazine called Molo Songololo, how often does it come out?
It was a bi-monthly magazine.
Bi-monthly.
So, yeah. So every 2 months, we would distribute the magazine, produce it and distribute it to children. The teachers would inform us how many copies they would like to have at this school. And what we found during those periods is that children also used to share the magazines with other children. They would do the puzzles together, the little quizzes, and they would read each other's letters and stories. They would check out each other's photographs. And so it created quite a buzz for children.
I'm sure.
The magazine was quite a powerful tool. Also, it also highlighted particular issues for children. In terms of, concerning their health, concerning their education, concerning their protection, and whatever other issues children wanted to highlight.
What about the editor? Is there must be an editor of something like that, because obviously children, with this enthusiasm and buzz you talk about, would be over-enthusiastic almost, so they need to be controlled with a good editor. Is there such a person?
Yes, we had a team, and then this team was also there just to sort of make sure that we are able to inform, consult, and empower the children, right? And then also to be able to make sure that there's a particular kind of standard that gets upheld, and also to look at content to protect the children, right? So that we can have a sense of that there's no content out there that whether it will compromise children for anything that they might or that we might publish of theirs. And then also tease children about, media laws, for example, media laws concerning children.
Absolutely.
And I remember it was also in, during the transformation period when Mola Sungulol started to produce television. It was called The Mola Show.
Oh, really?
It ran for a couple of years with SABC. And we then also used that as an opportunity to affect the media laws for children in South Africa. So that was also, and we used children's experience of that, because often what we children were saying, for example, yes, they do understand that we need to be protected, but when you protect us, you must not curtail our voices, right?
Oh, so that's an interesting point.
You know, because often we say no, but they are minors. But children also have a right to participate. They have a right to be heard. They have ideas and opinions. And they also want to make sure that their ideas and opinions are considered and also included, right? So when we take children, for example, to take part in law reform work in Parliament, it's often...
Oh, you do that as well?
Yeah, we do that as well. So when there's law reform happening, like the Children's Act, for example, we, of course, inform children, empower them about it. Like I have sessions where we tell them exactly what it is all about. And then we go to the hearings at Parliament and stuff like that. And the politicians and the parliamentarians find it very difficult to let us know eventually, or the children know, exactly how they considered their contributions. And that is still a big challenge that we have. It's nice for the media and for the camera to see that the children are there, but are you actually considering children's voices and ideas and opinions and contributions?
So, well, that is the point. It's nice for the media and cameras. Looks as though government is really helping children, but then what? And when their stories or articles are published, are their names published as well?
Yeah.
In the magazine?
Yes.
And do you have things like editorials? And would the editorial be written by an editor, or would one of the young children perhaps write an editorial?
Yeah, we had two editorials, one drafted by an adult and then checked with the children, and then children also would write their own one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Gosh, it sounds very interesting. Now, I'm very cross you didn't bring one with you, because I've never seen one, Molo Songololo. But anyway.
Next time I'll bring copies with.
Okay. Patrick, let's have a break for your next piece of music. Tell me what's this is, Not Yet Uhuru.
Oh, yeah, Not Yet Uhuru is a classic. And I think when you hear it, you will recognize it. And Letta Mbulu, I'm like, she is just phenomenal, right? She is just absolutely phenomenal. And I've had pleasure and the opportunity to see her live, perform live. Mm-hmm. She's just a magical, magical person. And her music is just made such a contribution to South African music. So she's just one of my big icons.
Well, there you are. That was a piece called Not Yet Uhuru. And who was the singer, Patrick?
Leta Mbulu.
Right. You were very enthusiastic about that at the beginning, and I see what you mean. My guest is Patrick Solomons. He is the executive director of Molo Songololo, and this is a registered and designated non-profit organization that promotes the right and protection of children. Very important. Section 28 of the Bill of Rights says that every child has the right to, and then a whole list of very important things. But now, you said this has been going for about 30 years or thereabouts.
Yeah, 45 years. 45 years this year.
Of this magazine, Molo Songololo.
Well, the magazine is not going at the moment because of funding problems.
Oh.
But we hope to restart it again.
Oh, that's sad news.
Yeah.
So tell me what you are doing now if the magazine is not going.
Yeah. We basically have four programs. One of our biggest program at the moment is where we do child protection victim empowerment work. This is where we work with children from the age of 12 to 17. Some of them are young, some of them older, who's experienced trauma because of sexual violence. Most of the cases we try and focus on is your sexual assault cases, your rape cases, and then, of course, sexual exploitation cases. And then now and then we come across a trafficking in children's case as well. So we provide, in that program, we do, of course, we receive reports, then we assess those reports, we receive referrals, and we sort of administer those referrals, or we make referrals. But then we do assessments, we do basic counseling, we do therapeutic work with the children and their families, and then also we do educational empowerment work with the children. At the moment, that work takes place in Atlantis and surrounding areas, Delft and surrounding areas, and Beaufort West and surrounding areas.
Oh, so you're not only in Observatory?
No, Observatory is only our administrative office.
Oh, okay.
But we also would have from time to time activities there, or when we have small groups, to specialist groups to counsel, then we'd have them there at the Observatory office. But most of the work happens within those targeted communities where the children live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that is our victim empowerment program that we have. And that is mainly funded by, of course, Social Development Western Cape. We also, now and then, when we get the money from Lotto, we get some money from Lotto as well for that, and from a whole range of other donors, and also quite a bit of support from public and friends of Molo, individuals that support that work. So that is very, very important work. We find that in those particular areas, we have a big problem with sexual exploitation. So it's not only your listeners might know as child prostitution, but there's also other forms of exploitation,
mm-hmm.
where children are being groomed for sexual favors.
It's amazing, right? How often you read about that in the newspaper. It's going on at a rate,
yeah.
which must be quite a challenge for you people.
Yeah, that is correct. For example, at today, in the Pretoria court, there's a case that was just recently alerted by FBI to the South African authorities about a child trafficking-related case involving one suspect is a principal, and another person is the boyfriend of the mother of the child, for example. And this is also linked to an international network of child pornography.
Yes, I actually saw that report. Yeah.
That's right. So the problem is quite widespread.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we try and do is working with children who are victims, but also try to prevent children who are at high risk from becoming victims. So that is the work that we do in that program.
How do you describe someone who's high risk?
There are various indicators that you can, children who are dysfunctional, not going to school, who drop out of school regularly, who hang out with people, who's inappropriate for their age and their own safety, who sleep out of the house a lot, who disappear and parents don't know where they are, what they do, children who are using substances, alcohol and drugs, for example, children who have boyfriends who are adults, older than them. So those are all indicators that they
high
could
risk.
Be at risk.
Yeah. Yeah. And are these people that work for you that involved in the magazine to try and make things better, do you find that they are male and female and all races?
The people that we work, like we employ for the Victim Empowerment Program, they are mainly females because most of our clients are female.
Oh.
We also get boys who are being, or are victims, but we find that boys often don't come forward or they drop out.
Yeah.
They don't.
There's a pride
attend.
Thing, isn't there, with boys?
That is correct.
Yes.
So once, so we work with children on a continuous basis. So we also provide support to them. We do regular home visits, for example, to them. We support them through the school process. Because a lot of children, when something bad happens to them, they drop out of school. So we try to get them back to school, provide them with support. If there's court cases, we support them through the court case. If they need to get medical attention, we assist them and do the assessments around those things. And then what we find with the children, often their parents went through similar kind of experience. The mothers in particular.
Interesting.
Went through similar kind of experience. And then we also provide counseling for the mothers. Mm-hmm. There are very few fathers in the lives of these children. Over 40% of the children that we work with don't have any fathers. Goodness. Haven't had a father since they were born, for example. Yeah. So that's also a crisis situation because the women are having to cope by themselves with their children. And often they don't have the kind of support that they need. So we do sort of basic parenting sessions with them as well. But also, more importantly, accessing them to other services that they might need and unlocking those services. And then we do also rights and education with children, life skills development work. So this way we work with children in the school system, and we do a lot of rights education work with them.
You go to the schools, possibly.
We go to the schools, yeah. Yes. I work in the schools scenario. Also on Saturdays or on weekends, do sort of empowerment camps with the children. And we find that that work helps children to develop mindfulness, understand their rights and their responsibility, and then also begin to make decisions that is positive for their development.
For their own development. That's right.
Correct.
That's
so confidence is improved and all that. And then, of course, lots of advocacy and lobbying work that we do. And then awareness. So we work also with other adults who provide service in local communities, whether they're government services or civil society services, and where we share our experiences and also try to work with them in a way so that they can improve the implementation of the rights of the child. So that is a body of work that we do at the moment.
Wow. It's quite a body, I have to say, and you must have quite a network, which I want to ask you about, Patrick. But let's take your next piece of music, Patrick. What have we got here?
Sibongile Khumalo.
Oh, the great Sibongile
Khumalo.
And she is singing Mayibuye.
That's correct, yeah.
And why have you put this in your list?
It's one of the songs I saw performed this the first time live in Cape Town, that song. And I think that was also after she came back to South Africa. She was out of the country for a while, and
that's
then she came back into the country. And then I was fortunate to be able to have a ticket and go and see her. So that song always resonated for me, and I think it was a live performance that she did. And it was such an emotional thing. There, you could hear a pin drop. The audience were quiet.
Yeah, yes.
And it was just her voice.
Let's listen.
And the accompaniment.
Yeah.
wonderful voice of Sibongile Khumalo there, who, as you know, Patrick, is at home in jazz or popular music as she is in classical music. Patrick Solomons is my guest, executive director of Molo Sungulolo, which is all about child protection and child rights. And I just want to find out about you. You're so passionate about this. You've been with the organization, you say, for some 30 years. What sort of background do you come from, or what got you into really quite a challenging business?
Yeah, it's sort of by default, but also because of design, I suppose. I came across Molo Sungulolo and they needed someone to help out, so I helped out for quite a while. But also during that period, I was also very much interested in children's rights, because I think that's a lot to do with my background.
That's what I want to find out. What got you to be interested in child rights?
It was because of apartheid, because I grew up in a situation where I experienced that I couldn't go here, couldn't go there, not allowed this, not allowed that. Mm-hmm. There were many things that I wanted to do or were curious about, but I was informed that it's not possible because of the color of my skin, because the way I was born and stuff like that. So the idea of understanding your rights and knowing your rights and what you do about that was my interest. Mm-hmm. And then I think Molo Sungulolo provided that vehicle for me for that expression.
When you discovered this magazine.
That is correct. Yeah. Because I'm like, I could never understand why is it that I couldn't sit in the bus anywhere I wanted or on the train anywhere I wanted. And remember, even up to the 80s, we couldn't go to certain beaches, for example.
Yes, yes.
So Molo Sungulolo provided that vehicle for my curiosity about how do you stop that? How do you create that? And what is it like to enjoy your rights?
My goodness. And also, you were very young at the time, so you were very aware as well, obviously. Is that right? And from a decent family?
That is correct. I'm like, well, the family was teased, yes, but also had his own problems and challenges. Alcoholic father, but he eventually changed his ways in later years and stuff like that. Disruptive family situation. Grew up in a Hartfield village, so Group Areas Act, for example, Retreat, Lavendales, Lakeside, then from there, Woodstock Observatory.
Very disruptive.
Yeah. In a way, but and I think from a very early age onwards, you then learn how you need to fend for yourself. And I think it's that kind of sort of survival instincts that you develop because of the experience within family, because of the social experience that you have, the political experience that you have, that you learn that you need to stand on your feet, you need to embrace yourself. And I think Molo Sungulolo became that vehicle to explore my curiosities about rights and protection, and then also to begin the idea of a happy childhood. What is that all about? How does rights relate to that? And then also the role of the state. What is the role of the state? Because often you hear, but it's not a state's problem. It's the parents might look after the children when the children misbehave and become dysfunctional and all that kind of stuff. But the state do have a role to play. And so that was also something that I was very, very curious about. And I think Molo Sungulolo provided me that vehicle to explore a lot of those things. And before I joined Molo Sungulolo, I was also I was exploring sort of early childhood development work, working with the very little ones.
Okay.
I did that for 2 years, and I said, no, I didn't have the patience for that. It's difficult work. So I'd really appreciate the people that do that kind of work. You have to be on your toes 24/7.
Wow. Okay, well, at least here you are now, and it was this Molo Sungulolo that got you in those early days, seeing it at school or wherever, and that's thinking, well, there's something here.
That is correct, yes. So it was actually the magazine. I went out to help the magazine, right? Because I was I had a bit of background, studying textiles, for example, did a bit of art background. And so I was able to draw and do layout and all that kind of stuff. So the magazine was for my technical skills. I volunteered first.
Right.
And then as I got to know what more it was all about, I got more involved in the organization. And then much later, I then joined the organization.
And yep. Now you're the executive director.
That is correct.
Goodness me. Patrick Solomons, your next piece of music I see features Pretty Yen there.
Oh, yeah. Isn't she just a jewel?
That's incredible. And she sang at the opening of Notre Dame.
That's correct. Last week or the week before.
That's right.
And she was at the castle or the Buckingham Palace. That's right, not so long ago.
She's been everywhere. And yeah. You've chosen Amazing Grace.
Yeah. It's one of those songs that where she, I heard us do that song on the radio, actually. I can't remember which radio, but she did it almost a cappella style.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I heard it again, it reminded me of that moment of her doing that song. But she's got a beautiful voice.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's such drama in her voice. Wow.
the glorious voice of Pretty Ende and the traditional tune Amazing Grace. And I'm talking to Patrick Solomons on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, who is the director, as you've heard, the executive director of Molo Songololo, a registered and designated non-profit organization that promotes the right and protection of children. And we've discovered endless rights that children do in fact have under Section 28 of the Bill of Rights. And you mentioned that the magazine's not being published at the moment because of funding problems, but you also mentioned that you do get funding from various. So do you have to spend time looking for funding?
Oh, yes. It's 24/7 every
is it
day.
Really?
Yeah. So it's very challenging for NGOs in South Africa at the moment because we depend on government funding and public funding and from businesses funding. The environment has become very competitive also. So you compete with a whole range of organizations to get to the funding. So at the moment, for example, we get funding from the Department of Social Development of Western Cape, and that's specifically to do work around the victim empowerment work. Of course, unfortunately, when the government contract NGOs, they don't pay them the full 100% of the work and how much it costs. But if you are a business and the government order water from you, they'll pay you the full 100% you charge them. So that is a kind of a funding model that is not really conducive and sustainable for NGOs in South Africa. And that's one thing that we need to really address. And the NGO sector really need to engage with government to try and change that, because there should be no reason why NGOs, non-profits should be, if a government contract you to do certain work, they should pay you 100% of the cost of that work.
I would have thought they would, but I'm surprised you say that.
You only
get
between 40 to 60% of that.
My goodness.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a challenge that NGOs have. So we have to top up the work that government contract us to do. Mm-hmm. So we get some money from the Lotto, the National Lottery Commission. Unfortunately, this is not a regular income. You compete also with a whole range of organizations, and the National Lottery Commission has now trying to clean up its own house. There's all this media reports about corruption and so on. Mm-hmm. And they've got a new system at the moment to register NGOs, and then you can apply. We've been struggling to access the platform for a couple of weeks now.
Oh dear.
And so we've been very stressful about that. But this morning when I opened my email, I saw that they sent us the username and a password. Hopefully it's going to work. So when I leave here, I can try and access that so I can complete the Molo Songololo application. And then we get some funding from businesses.
Mm-hmm. And private funding?
Private funding as well. Okay. And lots of individuals also give us money. And now we're very, we appreciate that kind of giving, because every little bit helps. NGOs like Molo Songololo, we need the support of ordinary individuals to be consistent also in their support. That can really, really help us. So even if it's a 1 rand or 5 rand or 10 rand on a monthly basis or weekly basis or whatever, so support your NGO, find out your NGO. If you like Molo Songololo's work, you're welcome to support Molo Songololo as well, seeing that it's now Christmas time and
yes.
You love to give during Christmas time.
The time of giving.
Yes, that is correct.
But now, Patrick, how do people contact you, by the way? Maybe, I mean, I hadn't heard of Molo Songololo, I'm ashamed to say, until a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, suggested I get in touch with you. But how would people who
the
want to be keen?
The easiest way to get hold of Molo Songololo, of course, is through the internet.
Yes, of course.
Most people nowadays have a phone, so they can quickly go on and just type in Molo Songololo, and then you'll see our digits will come up. So it's the easiest way to contact us. Right?
And
so we're also on Facebook. We also have a Twitter account. We also have, WhatsApp, right?
WhatsApp.
So all our details are there. So it's just Molo Songololo, and it will come up, it will pop up. And then from there, you'll be able to access all our social media stuff. And also, of course, we have a website as well. So it is also www.molosongololo.org. Very simple, very easy. You have access to a cell phone. You have access to the internet. Just type in Molo Songololo and go on a search.
And I'm going to do a spelling now. Molo Songololo is spelled M-O-L-O. And then the next word, Songololo, S-O-N-G-O-L-O-L-O. Molo Songololo. It's one of those things that's heartwarming to hear about, Patrick, and to hear people like you are doing this. So thank you. And I hope you go from strength to strength, may I say. And please send me a magazine when you next start publishing. But you were going to close now, and you've asked for an aria from Verdi's opera, La Forza del Destino, Pace Pace, sung by Masabane Cecilia Rangonasche.
Yes. Now, that's another jewel. And she was in Pretoria not so long ago, I think last year, doing the classics there.
Yes.
And that's when I also heard her. I heard her a while back in Cape Town many, many years ago. And then she became quite an acclaimed international star.
Very much so, very much so.
So, yeah, she's now also one of my favorites.
Okay, well, here she is singing this aria by Verdi. And thank you, Patrick Solomons. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity to have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
FMR 101.3.